पर्णपारिजाताय स्तोत्रभेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः। हरे कृष्णा। वेलकम बैक टू द भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। वी आर नाउ इन द 18th चैप्टर। वी विल लुक एट द हैप्पीनेस इन थ्री मोड्स एंड देन वी विल गो ऑन टू टॉक अबाउट हाउ द वैदिक प्रोग्राम ऑफ कर्मयोगा एंड देन भगवत अर्पित कर्मयोगा एंड भक्ति योगा थ्रू ज्ञान योगा helps one to transcend from the arena of the modes to beyond the modes. So let's look at happiness in the three modes. So to go back, the analysis till now, we talked about jnana, karma and karta in two classes earlier, and then buddhi and dhriti we talked about in our previous class. So now we come to sukha. So the connection is that ultimately all action that we do, we are aiming for the phala. The fruit of the action is happiness. So happiness itself can be in different modes. And let us look at the happiness in different modes. So 36th verse. Sukham dvaidanim trividham shrunume bharatarshabha abhyasa dharmate yatra dukkhantam jani gachati. Sukham tvaidanim trividham. So trividham, of three kinds, sukha. Happiness shrunume bharatarshabha. O bharatarshabha. Son of Bharata. There are these three kinds of happiness. Abhyasa dramate yatra. That by practice sometimes one engages in this happiness. And dukkhantam cha nigacchati. Dukkhantam cha nigacchati means that sometimes one comes out of misery. Dukkha anta, that means the end of misery, the end of misery. So Krishna is saying in the first part of the verse, sukham tvaidanim trividham shrunume bharatarshabha, that here Arjuna about three kinds of happiness, and he gives a generic overview of the three kinds of happiness by telling that sometimes abhyasa dramate yatra, sometimes the living entity enjoys this happiness, ramate, and sometimes dukkhantam cha nigacchati, that the living entity comes out of all misery, attains the end of all sorrow, dukkha anta. So earlier Krishna has talked about antavat imede, that the body is temporary, and then he has talked about how Adiyantavanta Kaunteya. So he is talking about first Antavanta Imedeha, he talks about 2.18, and then 5.22 he talks about how material pleasure has a beginning and an end. And then he has talked further about in the 7th chapter how the fruits of demigod worship are also temporary. Antavattufalam Desham Tadbhavatyalpamedhasam. So Antavat, temporary, or ending, that which has an end, that which is temporary. So Krishna has talked about various things that are temporary, but here he is talking about not just temporariness, he is talking about termination, complete ending. The termination of what? The termination of misery. So how will this misery become terminated? By the practice of Dukkhantam Chani Gacchati. So Vishwanath Chakra Thakur gives an alternative explanation of this. He says that, so basically he connects the second part of this verse. The verse is four parts, A, B, C, D. So second part means C and D. Abhyasa dramate yatra dukkhantam cha nigacchati. So he connects this with the next part. Next verse, 37th verse, talks about happiness in the mode of goodness. So he says that happiness in the mode of goodness has to be cultivated. And abhyasa dramate yatra, that actually this happiness doesn't come automatically. It has to be cultivated. One has to practice it. Abhyasad ramate yatra. That by abhyasa, by practice, one will start delighting in the happiness. And then dukkhantam cha nigacchati. So it is not that any and every happiness can bring the end of misery. There may be some temporary relief. You know, sometimes when people feel there are too many problems, then they drink a bottle of liquor. Now they think, they may not think literally, but their idea is that the solution to the problem is found at the bottom of a liquor bottle. No, at the bottom of a liquor bottle, there is no solution to a problem. Actually, there is only worsening of the problem. So there may seem to be like a dukkhanta, drown away all your misery in liquor. But no, liquor makes things worse. It makes a person suffer more than what the person was suffering earlier. So it's not a solution, it's an aggravation. So therefore, dukkhantam cha nigacchati. If one truly wants the anta of dukkha, the only way to do that is by going beyond the material modes. Because as long as one is in the realm of matter, one will be encountering temporary things, and that is going to cause suffering. Dukkhantam cha nigacchati. Dukkha anta will come when one goes beyond the arena of matter. And to go beyond the arena of matter, one has to practice. So one cultivates happiness and goodness, and after a goodness, one goes towards transcendence. Now in some ways, the happiness and goodness and its transcendence is similar. In some ways, it is different. Let's understand this first by looking at happiness and goodness. And there we'll look about this concept of abhyasa dharmate yatra a little bit more. So, yattadagre vishamiva pariname mrutopamam tat sukham satvikam proktam atma buddhi prasadajam. Yattad agre vishamiva, that which in the beginning tastes like poison, but in the end, pariname amrutopamam, but which in the end tastes like nectar, tat sukham satvikam proktam. That happiness is in the mode of goodness. Sukham satvikam proktam. And its characteristic is atma buddhi prasadajam. Atma buddhi. Atma buddhi means spiritual intelligence. Atma buddhi prasadajam. So prasadajam is born of. So actually Prabhupada means prasad, born of the satisfaction. And actually what happens is Prabhupada translates this as in the word to word, it translates as born of the satisfaction. In the sentence, it translates as which awakens one to spiritual realization. So, what happens is that when one practices spiritual life, by the practice of spiritual life, one moves forward from materialism to spirituality. And when one moves forward from materialism to spirituality, one starts delighting at the spiritual level. And to the extent one starts delighting at the spiritual level, to that extent one becomes more and more situated in the spiritual level. One intelligence becomes spiritually inclined. One's intelligence becomes spiritually situated. So, that's the meaning of Atma Buddhi Prasadajam. Atma Buddhi, spiritual intelligence. And actually, for a child, for example, playing is natural. Whereas studying requires application, requires discipline. So the child may not want to study at all. May feel bored. Oh, I don't want to do this. It's so troublesome. But then sometimes the parents have to force the child to go to school. And then finally the child goes to school. And when the child goes to school, then what happens? There the teacher asks, what is your name? And the child tells the name. He says, do you know how to spell your name? And then they say the child is small. He says, no. Oh, tell me. And then the teacher tells how to spell the name. Oh, this is so nice. Now I can spell my name. And the child starts getting the joy of learning. And as the joy of learning starts rubbing off on the child, and the child becomes more and more eager. Let me learn more and more and more. And in that way, the child starts relishing a higher happiness. So similarly, in goodness also, initially there may not be pleasure. But as one moves forward, one starts experiencing higher pleasure. So one starts experiencing the higher pleasure. So that higher pleasure is talked about as pariname amrutopamam. Pariname amrutopamam means that which is the result. The result. Parinam is happiness. So now for example, another example could be treatment. When we take any particular treatment, at that time, it's not initially pleasurable. But if we take the treatment, then we become cured. and then we experience the higher happiness thereof. So the word parinam is important. Parinam, it actually means result. So the result is ultimately sukha or amrita. So it tastes like poison in the beginning. Sometimes if I have somebody has a bitter medicine to take, so that bitter medicine is not palatable at all. In fact, the very word bitter is the opposite of palatable, antonym. But then that what happens is by that bitter medicine our health improves. Medicine is properly prescribed and taken and properly administered, then the bitterness may be bitter, but the effect is, result is good. So like that, agre visham pariname amrita. Now actually this, now does this apply also to spiritual happiness? If you see with respect to spiritual happiness, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Shiksha Ashtaka mentions that purna amrita swadhanam. It says pratipadam purna amrita swadhanam. So he says that this happiness in Sankirtan is pratipadam, means at every moment, at every pada, at each step. How is it? Purna amrita swadhanam. Purna amrita, it's complete nectar. Pratipadam purna amrita swadhanam. So he is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not talking here about, say, in the beginning poison and late nectar. He's saying actually it is complete nectar. And this is, of course, at a later stage. In the Shikshashtaka, the various effects of Sankirtan that are described: Cheto Darpana Marjanam, Bhavamahadavagni Nirvapanam, Shreya Kairava Chandrika Vitaranam, Vidyavadhu Jivanam. So, like that, as the various effects are described, Sarvatma Srapanam Pratibijaya Param Pratipadam Purnamruta Swadhanam. So like that, all these Param Vijayate Shri Sankirtanam. So now this is the one of the last results, Pratipadam Purnamruta Swadhanam. So actually this is at the spiritual level, actually the whole process is constantly ecstatic. The reciprocation of love, the engagement in service, it's all profoundly ecstatic. Till we come to the spiritual level, things may not be ecstatic. That till then, it's a struggle. As sadhakas, we have to go through that struggle. And when we go through that struggle, it is not easy. But once we come to the sadhasiddha level, then there is no agre visha and pariname amrita. It's completely amrita. But Rupa Goswami, in the Upadesha Amrita, also gives the example of the medicine. He says, Syat Krishna Nam Charita Abhisita Apya Vidya Pitopataptarasana Sinaro Chikanu Kintva Dharadanu Dinam Khalusai Vajishtva Swadvikramad Bhavati Tadgadamu Lahantri. So he says that Krishna Nam Charita Abhisita Apya Vidya. Avidya, avidya means ignorance. So when we are covered over by ignorance, it's like the tongue is affected by a disease. And be like jaundice, because of which one cannot taste the sweetness of sugarcane juice. A sweet thing like sugarcane juice, say. So similarly, we cannot taste at our stage the sweetness of the holy name and the sweetness of Krishna. But as we become purified, we will be able to taste the sweetness of Krishna. That's what is required. So Atma Buddhi Prasadajam. What Rupa Goswami indicates, it's a more specific example of the principle that is talked about over here. So there are now, for example, like the explanation of happiness in through learning, through studying. Now, in general, that is in goodness. That is not necessarily transcendental or eternal. But that nature of poison in the beginning and nectar in the end, that applies to happiness and goodness, and that also applies for happiness in transcendence. So as sadhakas, we shouldn't always be in the pleasure-searching mentality. No, if at all we have to be in any searching mentality, it's a service searching mentality. Now, how can I serve Krishna? Whatever the situation Krishna you put me in, how can I serve you in that situation? And that service searching mentality will enable us to move forward and will enable us to stay or progressing in our life. Because whatever the situation comes in, it's not in all situations we can experience pleasure. But in all situations, we can certainly render service. We may not be able to render service in a specific way, but we can render service in some other way. In some way or the other, we can always serve. At the very least, we can chant or we can remember Krishna internally. So service searching mentality can help us to become elevated. So pariname amrutopamam. Now, should we be looking forward to the parinam of amrit? So should we be looking forward for taste? For example, ruchi. Ruchi refers to taste. So when we talk about taste, what kind of taste are we referring to? It is not just the taste that we get through bhakti. Ruchi is one of the 9 stages in the progression of bhakti, from Shraddha to Prema, as talked about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So in this progression, ruchi is one of the advanced stages. So it is not just that we are getting pleasure at that level. Actually, we are giving pleasure to Krishna through our service. And when we give pleasure to Krishna, naturally we get pleasure by that. So our focus is always on service. And the more we serve Krishna, the more we get pleasure in serving Krishna, because our service pleases Krishna, and then Krishna in reciprocation fills our heart with service, fills our heart with pleasure. So we focus primarily on serving and pleasing Krishna, and naturally we get a taste through that as we become spiritually advanced and we become pure hearted. So initially we practice bhakti as a discipline, knowing that ultimately it will take me to the spiritual level where I will please Krishna, and then that will bring me pleasure also. So it's a natural result of purification that we will get satisfaction also. So our goal is not our satisfaction. Our goal is ultimately Krishna's satisfaction. But through Krishna's satisfaction, we get satisfaction ourselves too. Let's look at mode in the happiness in the mode of passion now. So the nature of happiness in the mode of passion is the Visha and Amrita gets interchanged as compared to goodness. Vishayendriya sanyogad yatadagre amritopamam pariname vishamiva tatsukham rajasamsmritam. So vishayendriya sanyogad. So when there is contact between the senses and the sense objects, and by this sanyoga, by this contact, what happens? Yatadagre amritopamam. There is amrit in the beginning, there is nectar in the beginning. And what is the parinam? Paranam is visha, is poison. Tat sukham raja samsmritam. This is happiness in the mode of passion. So, Krishna has already talked about in the 14th chapter, rajasas tufalam dukkham. He says the result of rajo, living in rajoguna is phalam dukkham. The phala is dukkha. So, yattad agre Visham agre amrutopamam. Now Krishna makes the nature of passionate pleasures quite clear when he says that they taste like they result from the contact of the senses of the sense objects. So in this world, say there are some foods which look very good and which taste very good, so people eat it. So then they eat and eat and eat, and then it is agre amrutopamam. It is like nectar in the beginning, but what happens eventually? Our digestive capacity is limited, so we try to eat and enjoy, but the digestive capacity being limited, eventually the result is that we get bloated, that our stomach gets bloated, we get indigestion, we may get constipation, or different kinds of problems we get. So actually speaking, the result is, and the end result is that there is misery. Pariname vishamiva. So vishayendriya sanyogad. So okay, the tongue comes in contact with some delicious object, but the end result of that is pariname vishamiva. End result is visham. So that is not at all a desirable kind of happiness. Although the whole world glamorizes this kind of happiness, this happiness is actually undesirable. In the Ramayana, when Lord Ram is very grief-struck because of the abduction of Sita, while consoling him, Hanuman, Sugriva and the Vanaras, they are talking, and they say that, actually, at that time Sugriva says that, no, Ravana can no more enjoy Sita than can a person digest poisoned food. Sometimes the food is looking very delicious. It's opulent, it's very attractive to look at. So yeah, wonderful food. And I can eat it. You know, as long as I'm eating it, it looks very nice. Oh, and Sadhas meaning also, this person is eating so much, he's enjoying so much. But if that food is poisoned, you know, I can eat it, but I can't digest it. Once it goes inside, they start burning me inside. It'll kill me actually. So similarly, when people enjoy sense gratification, the agre may be amrita. You know, when we say, oh, in the movies they show some good-looking men and women embracing and kissing and doing all sorts of things which trigger erotic fantasies in the minds of people. And people start thinking, oh, this is so enjoyable. And that may be there some initial enjoyment. But then, very few times do the movies talk about pariname vishamuva. Pariname vishamuva can range over a wide spectrum. Pariname vishamuva can be in terms of the consequences of sense gratification, like there can be the terrible diseases that come up because of indiscriminate sex. There can be terrible complications in terms of if people have extramarital affairs, then that can lead to abortion, that can lead to loss of prestige, that can be lead to, you know, love triangle sort of conflicts. And this is with respect to so many kamparaname vishamiva. And even if one doesn't talk about that, you know, even what is considered to be normal sex within marriage, if one gets too attached to that, then that rivets us to the bodily conception of life. And once when a person is attached to the bodily conception of life, then one has to suffer terribly as old age, disease and death come about. So, you know, we can't just switch on and switch off our bodily conception. If we are in the bodily conception, then we are deep in the bodily conception. If we are out, then we are out of the bodily conception. So, actually, to the extent we enjoy sense gratification, to that extent we bind ourselves deeper and deeper into the bodily conception. And when we bind ourselves deeper and deeper into bodily conception, it's very difficult to come out of it. When we can't come out of it, then we suffer when at the bodily level troubles come up. So old age, disease, death are the troubles which all of us are going to face. And along with that, there is also adhyatmika, adhipoti, adhivu, which keep coming. So pariname vishamiva. So all forms of sense gratification, they eventually lead to misery. The biggest misery being that they keep us trapped in the miserable cycle of birth and death. So that's why this sort of pleasure, it has to, if at all that is to be pursued, it has to be pursued within the limits of dharma. It's not that that is itself good enough, but the point is, if it's pursued within dharma, then what happens is the practice of dharma gives us realization, and it enables us slowly to experience higher happiness. And then the appeal of the lower pleasures subsides, and then eventually one becomes free from the allurement of those pleasures. Let's go now to the happiness in the mode of ignorance. Yadagrejanubandhecha sukham mohanam atmanah nidralasya pramadottam tattamasamudaritam yad agre cha anubandhecha. So, from the beginning to the end, anubandhe refers to the end. So, from agra, beginning to the end, sukham mohanam atmanah. As we mentioned earlier, the word mohanam is commonly used with respect to the mode of ignorance by Krishna. Sukham mohanam atmanah. It completely puts the soul in illusion. And Krishna gives three specific examples of, or three specific activities that comprise the pleasure in the mode of ignorance. Nidra alasya pramad ottam. So nidra alasya pramad. Let's try to understand this. Nidra, as we know, is sleep. So now sleep is a necessary bodily function. So Krishna has also talked earlier about yukta ahara viharasya yukta cheshtasya sapnasu. He has talked about it in 6.16 and 17. Where he says, Natyashnutastu yogosti na chaikanta manasnata na chati sapna shilasthi na jagrutu na chaivacharjuna. So in those two verses he has said that if one sleeps too much or sleeps too little, one cannot become a yogi. A yogi should not do that. On the other hand, if one is regulated when sleeping, of course not just sleeping, but other activities connected with the body also, if one is regulated, then one can by the practice of yoga become free from misery. So Krishna essentially is telling over there, sleep is also basic bodily function and it is essential part of life and it has to be regulated. But here Krishna is not just talking about sukha, he is not talking about nidra, he is talking about sukha. So when one sleeps for the pleasure of sleeping. Actually, sleep is a bodily biological function. So that is required as much. But one makes sleep not just for its function of biological restoration of energy, but also as an escape way from the problems of life. What does that mean? That means, you know, I try to make one thing work, it doesn't work. I try to make a second thing work, it doesn't work. Third thing doesn't work. Then I think, oh God, life is so filled with problems. So what I do, I just eat, and then I feel heavy and then I go to sleep. I pull a blanket and I forget all the problems. So now sometimes what happens is, you know, material nature humiliates us. Whatever we are trying to do, nothing works. And then when we try to sleep, we don't get sleep also. That is frustrating. Nothing seems to work. So we sometimes, material nature pounds within us the realization of utterly how helpless we are. We can't even do by our own efforts such a basic activity like sleeping. And even from the both the experiential and the analytical point of view, we sleep every day, maybe several times every day, especially when classes are there, we may sleep in the classes also. But when we sleep, how exactly we sleep, it's a mystery. You know, at one moment we are awake and gradually we are getting lulled into a sense of sleepiness, and then it's like a switch that turns to another place. So we go from the Jagruti stage to the Swapna stage. There are four different levels of consciousness. From Jagruti to Swapna we go. So that's how we move. We get switched. So how it exactly happens, we don't know. But the point is that if one seeks, one sleeps for the sake of pleasure as a escape way from the torment of life, then that kind of escape way is undesirable. It is counterproductive. And nidra, so that is actually in that kind of pleasure, it's not a pleasure actually. It's just as an escape way. And we are just trying to run away from problems over there. And we can't run away for very long. The problems are still there. We're just wishing the problems away. Nidra, alasya. Alasya refers to laziness. Sometimes we have work to do and just put off the work. So sometimes some people think that the more we are able to put off the work, the more clever we are. You know, I give today, I give this excuse. Tomorrow, I give that excuse. I'll give that excuse. And after tomorrow, I'll give this excuse. And like that, somehow the work which we don't like to do, we just keep pushing it off. And we think, oh, this is, I was able to get away from the work. But then when we think like that, the error with that is that how are we going to grow in our life? Now, we grow by doing things. Now, certain things we may not like to do, but sometimes by doing the things which you don't like to do, we grow mentally, because we develop our willpower, we develop our determination, and we develop a culture of discipline, and all these will stand us in good stead. Sometimes we in good stead in the long run, but sometimes we may feel, oh, this activity is not likable and it is not very productive also. There's no use doing it. No, even then, if we are expected to do it, if our social obligations or spiritual obligations, whatever they expect us to do it, we do that as a service, as a responsibility. And even if nothing comes from it, that culture of self-discipline, that is going to help us in the long run. So, alasya, actually, there is no pleasure only in that. But one thinks that there is pleasure, because one assumes that in that I'm enjoying, but I'm not enjoying actually, I'm suffering. So, nidra alasya pramadottam. Pramada means as intoxication, illusion, madness. So, pramada can come in various ways. One of the literal examples of pramada is drinking. Now, actually, when a person drinks, it's agrechanubandhecha. From the beginning to end, it's actually misery. The person is miserable at the beginning. So then I think, oh, I want some relief, and therefore I'll drink. And once a person starts drinking more and more, the person drinks, the more and more the person becomes bound by that intoxication. And then the person becomes like a madman. There may be some sense of control and power and pleasure, but actually one is doing terrible things, maybe speaking terrible things, doing terrible things. And one becomes ridiculously helpless afterwards. One may do embarrassing things, self-destructive things. One may do things that hurt others. Sometimes people, know, under the effect of alcohol, abuse others, assault others. It can all sort of terrible things. So there's no pleasure over there. Afterward, one gets a hangover, one gets a regret, and then one has financial consequences and other social consequences that come up because of that. So agrecha anubandhech, from beginning to end, there is misery. So the mohanam or the nidra alasya pramadottam, the pramad can come in various ways. The pramad can also come through television. Television, if we see, is not run by people who are interested in social welfare. No, it's run by people who are interested primarily in monetary gain. And there may be some educational programs, but a large variety, the large majority of things are primarily geared towards entertainment, and not just simple, innocent entertainment, but the kind of entertainment that will trigger lust, trigger anger, trigger greed within us. So, in general, the activity that are shown in television are rajasic and tamasic. Most of the time, rajasic and tamasic. And these influence, the influence of passion and ignorance is that when we observe such things, they have an effect on us and they trouble us, they torment us. We get induced into doing similar activities. So that is extremely undesirable. When, for example, there are nowadays in the within the entertainment, lust and anger are glamorized. For example, sexually explicit scenes are quite common. And similarly, brutal violence is also shown. And then actually many of these people, they say that we have done surveys and it doesn't have any effect. It's not that people are going to act like that. It's not that. Actually, they say the media is simply reflecting society. Media is not affecting society, it is reflecting society. That means their idea is that, you know, that's what people are liking, and that's what people are, that's why they're seeing it. Now, it's not that they will do it, they'll just see it and they'll stop at that. Actually, it's very difficult to stop just by seeing. Once the desires are induced, people will want to do it. And if one doesn't, this is a simple logical point, but people don't agree to that, and statistics are often manipulated to try to keep the, say, like the pornographic industry going on. And as contrasted with that, if we look at, say, advertisements. Now, the advertisements, they have no objective. It's not that their only objective is to promote the product. And sometimes millions, billions of dollars are pumped into advertising. Now, if by advertising a product, the people are not going to act according to their advertisements, when they show a popular icon, maybe a sports star, a movie star, or whatever, such a person consuming a product, maybe eating or wearing or whatever, then when people show something like this, what is the result of that? The people who are making the ads and the people who are paying to make the ads, the producers of the product that is being glamorized, is advertised, they know that people will imitate this. The viewers, the audience, the spectators will imitate this. Okay, this person is wearing this shampoo, then I will also wear this shampoo. This person is doing this, I will also do this. So because they are sure of that imitation, that is why they spend so much money. So, if a 5 second, 10 second, 20 second short advertisement is likely, not just likely, is surely going to affect people's behavior, then what about programs which are filled with lust and greed? How are they not going to affect people's minds? They are going to affect people's minds. So, the pleasure that is there from beginning to the end, what it is, it is actually tamasic. So that which dulls and lulls, that which dulls and lulls. Lulls means that it makes one physically complacent. Just sit and watch, sit and watch, sit and watch. It lulls people. And not only does it lull people, lull means, you know, to make physically inactive, and dull means to make intellectually passive. People become dulled. Generally, because television is such a passive medium, You know, people just started to watch, consume digital images. So because of that, their capacity for thought, thinking goes down tremendously. Because their capacity for thinking goes down, so therefore they get caught in, the seductively appealing and readily consumable images. And sometimes people just keep eating, you know, while watching, they're watching and eating. They keep eating potato chips and they become like potatoes after that. So what is happening over there? Actually, the pleasure is an illusion. So it can be in passion, it can also be in ignorance, especially when people become addicted. Television addiction is there, and people spend hours and hours watching television. Now, of course, whatever is available in television, it can be available in a much more high-tech way through the internet. And if television had 100, 200 channels, then internet, there are thousands of websites, and there are games, and there are so many things over there. So one has to be careful. Now, it's not that one has to necessarily give up these things. It's not necessarily that television itself is an ignorance. What we're talking about is the sukha. What kind of sukha one is pursuing? So on the internet also we can have spiritual educational programs. And one has to basically decide what kind of happiness I want to pursue in my life. Actually, our standard of life will largely be determined by our standard of happiness. Standard of happiness means, what kind of happiness do I want to pursue in life? What is the way that I want to live in my life? The standard of happiness that I am going to pursue, that is what is going to enable me to either rise or go down in my life. So if we chase after happiness in ignorance, there may be some happiness there, but overall our consciousness, our life and our post-life destination, they're all going to be downwards. So if we choose upwards, if we choose happiness and goodness and practice abhyasa dharmate yatra, if we practice to make spiritual advancement, then gradually we can get unending happiness. So this is about happiness in the mode of ignorance. Let's move forward now to the next topic. So here the analysis of the modes ends, and now from here onwards Krishna starts talking about how one rises from karma yoga through varanashram, through jnana yoga, to ultimately to bhakti yoga. So what is the connection between this and the previous sections? This chapter, actually the chapter started with a discussion of Arjuna's question, what is better, is action better? Krishna is asking, effectively Arjuna's question is the same as what was the writer at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, is action better or is renunciation better? But here he rephrases it as, you know, can you explain to me what is tyaga and what is sannyas? That was the starting question in 18.1. And Krishna's answer was that, actually, rather than renouncing work, one should work, but with a spirit of renunciation, work with detachment. And how work with detachment will keep one free from bondage, to describe that, subsequent two sections came up. So 1 to 12 was talking about how karma yoga is the recommended course. Then one talking about the jnana of the karma yogi. They're talking about the jnana of karma yogi. The five factors of action were described: adhishtanam, tatha karta, karanam, cha prithak vidha. So, and after discussing that, then the various components of action, jnana, karma, karta, and buddhi, dhuti, they were discussed. And then sukha, the objective of action, that was discussed. So after discussing this, now, how the karma yogi with an introspective attitude, with jnana within, can stay free from bondage, that is described. Now how this is integrated into social structure of varanashram, and how through the social structure of varanashram people become elevated, that will be discussed in the next section. So let's go to the 18.40 here. Natadasti prithivyam va divideveshu va punaha sattvam prakritijair muktam yad evisyatribhir gunai. So natadasti prithivyam va, that in the whole of prithivyam, in the whole of earth, divideveshu va punaha. So what to speak of the earth, even in the heavenly planets, among the devatas, sattvam prakritijair muktam. So in all of existence, sattvam here doesn't refer to goodness, sattvam here refers to all of existence. So both meanings are there for sattvam. Prakriti jair muktam. Prakriti jair means that which is born of prakriti. So yad ebhisyatri guna tribhirgunai. So tribhirgunai, these three modes which are born of prakriti, nobody is mukta. Nobody is free from these modes. Everybody is under the influence of these modes. So Krishna has earlier also talked about this theme of how nobody can be inactive, but here Krishna is talking about the universality of the influence of the three modes. Now everybody is influenced by the three modes. Nobody is free. So even the devatas, we see sometimes they act in passion. Indra gets attracted to say Gautam Rishi's wife or things like that. So these are indicative that the modes are there everywhere. So now, if a problem is there everywhere, then there has to be a program for solving that problem. And that program is the system of Varnashram. And that will be described in the next verse. Brahmana Kshatriya Visham Shudranam Cha Parantapa Karmani Prabhivrittani Sabhava Prabhavair Gunai. So Brahmana Kshatriya Visham. Brahmana Kshatriya Visham. So these are Visham is a short form for Vaishya. And Shudranam Cha Parantapa. Oh Parantapa, you are a conqueror. You are a great conqueror. But that doesn't mean that you alone can conquer everything. Actually, it means that if you want to conquer the influence of the modes, you will have to take shelter of a particular system of socio-cultural organization by which you can conquer these modes. Just like if there is sickness, now it's not just by willpower that the sickness can be overcome. Willpower is important, but willpower has to be coupled with a proper program for treatment. So similarly, actually this Varnashram is quite a remarkable system, and we don't see anything as systematic as Varnashram present in any of the religious cultures of the world. What does it mean when I'm saying this? That actually every religion has at its core certain scriptures. Say there's the Bible for the Christians, there's the Quran for the Muslims, and like that the religions have their scripture, and those give some broad principles of how to live and how to act. But when it comes to acting within day-to-day life, it is a very complex thing to do. Now, the scriptural principles are quite demanding, and to understand them, to internalize them, life in the material world generally is materialistic. So the environment is materialistic. The extent of materialism may be lesser or more at different times, but materialism is very much there. So when materialism is there like that, how does one overcome the influence of materialism? It is not easy. The way to overcome this influence is by practicing spiritual life in a structured way. So without such a structured arrangement, just individual endeavor is quite uphill. So in the Vedic culture, through the Chaturvarna Maya Srishtam, as Krishna says, that actually these four Varanas, if we see them as four human types, not as castes, but as four human types. So whether it is even if the mainstream religion of a particular area is Christian or it is Muslim or whichever it is maybe. If within that area, people are, there will be natural division. There will be people who are Brahmanas, there will be Kshatriyas, there will be Vaishyas, there will be Shudras, there will be people of these tendencies. There will be some people who will be administrators, there will be some people who will be intellectuals, there will be some people who will be, business inclined, and some people who will be general assistants, artisans and things like that. So these are all definitely important things in terms of, these are naturally present in society, but that doesn't mean that the people will automatically behave according to those qualities. We'll see later on in this section, this division, when Krishna will describe, he'll talk about the qualities with which these particular Varanas are meant to live. So there will always be intellectuals, but that doesn't mean that just by being an intellectual one can make spiritual advancement. No, one has to be an intellectual, but one has to also have a social structure where one's intellectual role can be performed in a way that leads to gradual spiritual advancement. So there are intellectuals and they can study different varieties of subjects, different kinds of books. And through the study of different kinds of books, they can learn and they can grow, no doubt about that. But as they are learning and growing through that, if that learning is divorced from the ultimate purpose of life, then that learning is not of much substantial use. So for it to be of substantial use, it has to be connected with the ultimate goal of life. The ultimate goal being self-realization, Krishna realization. So for the intellectuals to perform their intellectual role in a way that is harmonious with the ultimate purpose of life, a social structure is required. Otherwise, intellectuals have to do whatever role is available for them in their particular socio-cultural environment. So now in today's environment, intellectuals may become scientists, intellectuals may may go into literature and they may write poetry or they may write philosophical literature or social analysis. So definitely their intellectual skills are required and they are used also. But that is not that by this they will develop intellectual qualities in terms of what Brahminical qualities are expected. So there is guna and karma. Chaturvarna maya sushtim guna karma bhagasha. So that's what Krishna has talked about in the fourth chapter, and that he will be elaborating in this chapter about how these modes ultimately take a person to transcendence, how they help a person to ultimately come to Krishna. That's what we'll be talking about over here. But first he will talk about the, at the material level, what are the qualities expected of each of the intellectuals. So when we say that Maya Srishtam, this is created by Krishna, that means Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras are present in all societies. That simply means that people with those karmic tendencies are there, guna and karma. So that karma which is there, that proficiency to do that activity. So this is proficiency to earn money, proficiency to organize and manage and delegate and oversee, say, which is the Kshatriya's propensity. So that is there. So that is good. If one has that capacity, one should use that capacity. So a person who has a Vaishya propensity should be engaging in Vaishya activities. That's how the person will get even what in metal circles is called a job satisfaction. One will be satisfied in doing activities according to one's propensity. If one can do that, discover one's propensity and act accordingly, that is good. But just acting according to one's propensity is not doesn't relate to naturally playing a role in Varnashram. Actually, acting according to one's propensity is just one part of it. The other part of it is that one has to do that karma within the dharmic framework. So if one is an intellectual, one should study about Shastra and teach about Shastra. To study spiritual knowledge, teach spiritual knowledge. When there is a dharmic framework for one's performance of prescribed duties, then that will gradually lead to elevation. So karmani prabhivaktani swabhava prabhavair gunai. Swabhava prabhavair gunai. So one's swabhava is associated with modes, and from that swabhava emerge the certain propensities, and the system of varnashram pravibhaktani, it's divided in such a way that everybody according to their nature can become elevated. So let's look at the qualities of the brahmanas. Shamo damas tapah shaucham shantirarjam avevacham jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma suvavajam. So shamo damas tapah shaucham. So Krishna lists over here 4 plus 2 plus 3, 4 in the first line, 2 in the second line, and 3 in the third line, 9 qualities of a brahmana. And he says brahma karma swabhavajam. So for a person who is to do brahma karma, for a person who is brahmanically inclined, these qualities are important. So what are these qualities? It's interesting, when Krishna talks about these qualities, there is no mention of bhakti over here. Why is in the qualities of a brahmana bhakti not mentioned? You might think a brahmana doesn't have to have bhakta. Well, not necessarily. the quality that is mentioned relevant over here is Astikyam. Astikyam means faith in scripture, faith in the principles of Vedic culture. Now that faith doesn't necessarily have to be in the faith in the highest principles of Vedic culture. The highest principle of Vedic culture is pure devotion. So we see in the Bhagavatam that the Bali Maharaj pastime in which Shukracharya actually works against the purposes of Vishnu. That Bali Maharaj wants to surrender as per the promise that he has given to Vamanadev, and Shukracharya is telling, no, he's Vishnu, don't submit. So now, although Shukracharya does that, at the end of the pastime, we don't see Shukracharya being chastised by Lord Vishnu. It's certainly clear from that whole context that Shukracharya is not a pure devotee. And the whole pastime actually is meant to demonstrate the exalted devotion of Bali Maharaj. But at the same time, there is no remonstration. Remonstration means chastisement of Shukracharya that happens directly over there. So it's not considered you are a hypocrite, why are you going against Vishnu, you are not a proper Brahmana. No, Brahmanas can be of different levels. And there can be Brahmanas who perform also Rajasic, Tamasic activities. They may not necessarily be talking about principles of pure devotion. So for example, there are Tamasic rituals also which are there. We know that the Puranas talk about worship in goodness, worship in passion, worship in ignorance. And if the worship in ignorance is to be performed, then there have to serve certain priests who will perform their worship in ignorance. So within that framework, those priests are considered Brahmanas. So those Brahmanas may not have faith in the principles of pure devotion, but as long as they have generic faith in scripture, generic faith in the existence of a higher power with whom we need to harmonize for gaining our needs fulfilled, for getting our needs fulfilled, that faith is defining to the life of a Brahmana. So Astikyam. So bhakti may not be always there in a Brahmana, and that's why there are shlokas which talk about, like Prahlad Maharaj says, Viprad Vishad Gunayutad Arvindanabha Padaravinda Vimukhachvapacham Varishtam Manyet Darpitamano Vachine Hitartha Pranam Punati Sakulam Natubhurimanaha. He says if there is a Brahmana with all the qualities of a Brahmana, but if that Brahmana is turned away from Vishnu, and in contrast there is a Shvapacha, person very low born, but is turned towards Vishnu, that Shvapacha is much greater. So the point is that Brahmana may not have bhakti all the time. So there can be a Brahmana who can be Vimukha, who can be turned away from Lord Vishnu. So from the material point of view, the Brahmana is in the high Varna. But from the devotional perspective, that Brahmana is not favorably situated, unfavorably situated as compared to Shvapacha. So the point which we are making is that Varanashram is primarily a material socio-cultural division. It is no doubt favorable for spiritual life, but it doesn't have to be intrinsically spiritual. It doesn't have to be intrinsically spiritual. And it doesn't have to be it's not that Brahmanas have to be intrinsically situated in devotion to be called Brahmanas. Yes, as devotees, when we develop like Brahman Diksha, it's assumed that we are practicing Vaishnavism, and then when we take Brahman Diksha, it's more like we come to goodness by which we can practice devotion more steadily. But intrinsically the Brahmanas don't have to be devotees, although from the perspective of the conclusion of Vedic culture, devotees are higher than Brahmanas. So the devotees, when the Brahmanas mature, that time they will become devotees. But here, what are the qualities that I mentioned? Shamo, tamas, tapah, shaucham. So Prabhupada says, Shamo and Dhamma, Shamo refers to sense control, Dhamma refers to mind control. Sense control means, Shama refers to mind control and Dhamma refers to sense control. So actually it's best if we don't let the mind only get agitated by temptation. But if the mind gets agitated, then at least we don't act according to temptation. So if I know there is a thief outside, the best is I don't open the door only. But if I open the door and the thief starts charging in, then I have to fight against, bang myself against the door and close the door and push the thief out. So like that, I know outside the door of my consciousness, Maya is there, temptations are there. So best is lock the door. That means best is just keep the mind busy in Krishna's service and don't open the door for, don't leave time and scope for Maya to come inside. But if somehow we leave the door open, Maya tuck, forces the way inside. Then what do we do? We push back. We chant Hare Krishna, take shelter of Krishna, fill our mind with Krishna and close the door again, busy ourselves in Krishna. So Shama and Tama. So it's best if you can do Shama, keep the mind only peaceful. If you can't do Shama, then at least Dhamma. Don't let the indulgence happen at the physical level, even if the mind's agitation is there. And living in this way, Shama and Dhamma, that is Tapa. So Tapa involves, also Brahmanas are expected to live quite austerely. There are fast, there are the various ways they have to fast, various kinds of cleanliness that they have to follow. That is mentioned, Shaucham. Shantir Arjavamevacha. Shanti, as Prabhupada mentions over here, is tolerance. So Brahmanas generally don't raise weapons. When Vishwamitra, who was previously a king Kaushik, when he came to steal the cow of Vasishtha Muni did not take up any weapons to fight. So why? Because Brahmanas are expected to be forgiving. Brahmanas don't refer, whenever, even if they're attacked, they just tolerate it. Shantir. Arjavam. Arjavam means honesty. And Brahmanas shouldn't speak falsehood. Falsehood, because if they speak falsehood, then they are meant to speak the ultimate truth and take people towards the ultimate truth. So when they start speaking falsehood, then that's a contamination in the Brahmanical culture. And then Jnanam Vijnanam Astikyam. Brahmanas cultivate spiritual knowledge and then they live in such a way, in a pure, dedicated way by which they realize that spiritual knowledge. So Jnana is theoretical knowledge, Vijnana is internalized, realized knowledge. And for this Jnana and Vijnana to have a spiritual orientation, they have to have a faith in spiritual reality. They have to have faith in scripture that guides them to spiritual reality. And they have to have faith in the overall Brahmanical culture. So these are the qualities of a Brahmana. And as devotees, we also try to develop as many of these qualities as possible. And by that, we also create a platform by which we can make steady spiritual advancement. So what is the role of Varnashuram in Bhakti Yoga? That we will discuss further in our next class. Thank you. Hare Krishna.